This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who tucks Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Talamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a brand spanking new show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is Jock Talk with myself, Mike Penna, and jockey Christina McManigal serving as your host. I can actually say that each and every Tuesday from 6 to 7 Eastern, and extremely happy to have everybody joining us at Horse Racing Radio .net as we embark upon an exciting show. And Christina, can't think of a better person to be sitting next to me right now and help me host a Jock Talk show.
You're too kind, Mike. Thank you very much. But this is going to be great. We're going to have a lot of really good people on this show, good jockeys on the show, and we're ready.
Yeah, and of course, this is a show that will support the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund with a portion of the sponsorship going back to that organization. You can learn more at pdjf.org and support those riders that have given us so many memorable moments. And one of those riders is with us here to kick things off. Can't think of a better way to do it than with a Hall of Famer. And we welcome to the program the 49-year-old native of Roswell, New Mexico. He has won 5,239 races to date in a career that is still going very strong. And among those victories are wins in the Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes. He has 2 winning rides in the Belmont and more Breeders' Cup victories than any jockey in history with 21. He was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame in 2003. And if you haven't guessed by now, he is jockey Mike Smith, and he is here to get us started on the first of many Jock Talk shows on HRRN. Mike, as always, so happy to have you with us tonight.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome to the show. And, you know, hey, a lot of pressure going into being our first guest on this brand new show here tonight. But when I look at your record and I run through your resume, I'm pretty sure you can handle that pressure, my friend.
I'll certainly try.
Well, Christina here with me as well, as you just heard, and really looking forward to spending the next hour with you and getting to know you and you letting listeners know you a little bit better. I'm always curious, though, when I walk through the resume, so to speak, of our guests and I go through all of the accolades and the number of wins and the big races that you've won, when you hear me run through those numbers and talk about those races, what goes through your mind, Mike?
Oh, just very blessed, very humbling, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's been an incredible career, and as I mentioned, still going strong. I always like to take this show and start from the beginning. So take me back to the early days of Mike Smith growing up in Roswell or right around Roswell, and I guess maybe that's slightly inaccurate because from what I was reading, you're actually born in a much smaller town just outside of Roswell.
Yeah, I was born in Roswell, in the hospital there in Roswell, but raised in a little town outside of Roswell called Dexter, New Mexico. Just a little farming town. Not very many people actually from there, but a lot of horses and a lot of cattle and just a lot of farming.
We're on
Earth. That's where I got started, where I grew up. My grandparents had a farm there and owned quarter horses, race horses and all kinds of horses, actually, and had an uncle who worked on the ranch as well with my grandfather, who also trained on the side. So at a young age, I was able to, was able to surround myself with horses, and that's what I loved,
So, Mike, is that what you started out doing, riding quarter horses?
Yes, actually, I did. Yeah, I started with quarter horses in the very beginning at a young age, just like I said, where my grandparents and my uncle had horses, There's a thing they call match races, So, one rancher would match his horse against another rancher and see who's faster. And, kind of a big thing on Sundays that a lot of the ranch people did around that area. you know, New Mexico and Texas and all around. There's some people even come in from Mexico with these big match races. And so I started riding them at a pretty young age. I think I was 11 or 12 when I started riding match races.
Wow.
So, like I said, was blessed, you know, to be around horses, a lot of people who are really, really good horsemen that taught me from the ground up, you know. So it was important, you know, for a guy, you know, that young to be able to get all that learning experience in. You learn real fast and you grow up real quick. I was always blessed to have really good people, you know, around me, between my grandparents and my uncle, and, you know, meeting people throughout the industry as your career grows and goes on. It's all about surrounding yourself with the right people and learning and doing the right thing.
What did your mother think of you wanting to be a jockey, Mike?
Well, she wasn't very happy about it in the beginning, to be honest with you. Of course, you know, every mother wants their child to go through school and learn all you can learn and hopefully pick an occupation that, you know, you're going to make a good living at and something that's not so dangerous. But it was my passion. It was what I loved. My father rode actually as well, which he had stopped riding by the time I was, you know, I was old enough to know any difference. He had already gotten too big, but, you know, she certainly didn't really care for that type of life and didn't want me to be around it in the beginning. But, you know, once you realize that's all I wanted in life and all I was going to do, to be honest with you, I was very stubborn about it. And, of course, you know, held my own, and she finally gave in, and you figured, well, I'm going to do this. I might as well just, you know, embrace it and let you go for it and see what happens. And if I let you do it now at this young age, maybe if it doesn't work out, I can always go back to school. And like I said, it just took me so many different places at a very young age. It was so blessed to be around the right people who taught me so much. And you know, one thing leads to another, and here you are.
Mike, was that a gradual process, or was there one defining moment as a kid? Obviously, you were very young when you started, but was there one specific moment that you can remember when you thought, aha, I found what I want to do with my life?
To be honest with you, I knew that at a very young age. I mean, it's all I ever wanted. And I just can't ever remember struggling. And I say that, and I don't mean that I always did real well as far as winning a lot of races. It just wasn't struggling for me. It's what I loved so much. It was just fun. I didn't care if I won or not half the time. It was I was just glad to be a part of it, you know, and loved it so much. And you just, you know, when you have such a passion for something, I think that when you're blessed to find something that you have a passion in life and get to make a living at it, it's not ever work, is it? I mean, it's just a lot of fun, and it's what I do, and it's what I still do, and it's what I still have a passion for. And you know, the financial part of it is just, you know, it's just icing on the cake, to be honest with you.
Well, Mike, it's interesting. When you Google jockeys from Roswell, New Mexico, you get disc jockeys from Roswell, you get videographers, you get photographers, but it's not exactly a hotbed for jockeys. But Roswell, known for something else, and that's UFOs and the International UFO Museum and Research Center based in Roswell. Did you ever see a UFO when you were living there?
Not when I was there. I think I was old enough to drink when I was living there. See, I don't think you see those until after you're old enough to have a few.
Did you ever know anybody that claimed to see one?
I think we've all met someone that claimed to saw something anyway. But not too many people, to be honest with you.
Oh, my goodness.
Mike Smith here on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, the other thing I looked up, Mike, that I found interesting was when you Google racetracks near Roswell, New Mexico, and you get the Roswell Dragway. Do you ever spend any time there?
No, I haven't. To be honest with you, I didn't even know they had a dragway there. Like I said, I didn't, you know, when I was at that age, you know, I didn't get into Roswell that often. I stayed around the farming towns, you know, Dexter, Hagerman, Artesia, Carlsbad, then I'd go into Texas quite a bit, Lubbock, Texas, Humburger, Texas, places like that to ride and to race. The only time I'd go into Roswell every now and then was maybe to get on a few horses, you know, that were stabled around that area. And Buena Suerte Ranch, which is a real big ranch, back in New Mexico, was one place I used to go and get on horses for Mr. Merritt when I was very young. You know, a place like that. But I spent most of my time, you know, back in Dexter and that part of town. And that when we finally went to the track, I think the first track that my uncle took me to, besides Ruidoso, New Mexico, was Santa Fe, and that's where I started actually professionally.
Mike, obviously you were very young when you first started riding horses, but did you play any sports as a kid?
Yeah, I loved football. I wanted to be a linebacker, but as we all know, I didn't grow big enough to tackle the water boy, to be honest with you. But I still have a passion for football. I've had a lot of friends that have played. I have some friends that are coaching right now in the NFL. You know, it just was always I wanted to be Brian Urlacher, who was from New Mexico, who actually was a great linebacker for the Chicago Bears. But like I said, never grew, but, you know, was always pretty athletic. I mean, I could play all the sports, and I played all of them. I just never was a superstar at any of them. And the only thing I was really, really good at and I could compete at was a horse. I just had a knack for him for whatever reason. I just seemed to get along with him. That's probably where I was the most comfortable always. Actually, I was more comfortable sitting on a horse than I was having to stand in front of somebody and talk to them, to be honest with you.
Wow. Do you have an NFL team that you follow now, Mike?
Well, I it's hard to say, but I've been a Jets fan since I was a kid, and it's like I said, it's tough to swallow, but they haven't been doing very well. They've had a rough year again this year, but another team I follow because a few of my friends are coaching on the team is the Atlantic Falcons. A guy named Brian Cox is one of my dearest friends. He's a defensive line coach, and then Mike Tice is the offensive line coach, who I ride some horses for actually right now.
And their head coach is named Mike Smith.
And the head coach is Mike Smith. Is that something? I was hoping for a better season, but it ain't over yet, so we'll see. But yeah, still a Jet fan, always have been, and I guess always will be. But hopefully one of these seasons we'll have a winning season.
Was there a specific jockey that you idolized when you were a young kid, Mike?
You know, there's so many of them, to be honest with you, that I idolized. You know, when I was young, when I first started, I mean, I used to look at quarter horse riders like, you know, Gary Sumner and Willie Lovell and Jackie Martin and those guys when I was, you know, in the Hunting Brothers when I was very young. And then, of course, when you get into thoroughbreds, you know, I was blessed, you know, to ride it with some great riders, even in New Mexico, that were just really, really good horsemen that I got a chance to ride with. And then I went into Hot Springs, Arkansas in 1982 or 83, I think it was, and met Pat Day, and he was kind of my mentor for a long time, to be honest with you, and he'll always be hold a special place in my heart, but I idolize them all. Like I said, I was blessed to ride with, you know, Angel, George Jacinto, and Jerry Bailey, and you know, here in California, Gary Stevens, Eddie De La Russi, Pete Kim Kai, you know, Shoemaker, Chris McCarron. I mean, I've been so blessed. I think I came up in an era that was a really good time to come up here, and there were so many talented riders, and it'd be like coming up in the era, you know, when Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird were playing in the NBA. You know, I don't know if we'll ever get to a decade or so like that ever again with that kind of talent in it. You know, those guys are still the greatest of all time, you know.
You mentioned Pat Day being your mentor and helping you so much in the early days. What was it that he did for you that you're so indebted to him for?
You know, it wasn't just about horses. You know, with Pat, as you well know, he's a very religious guy, which I am as well. And just to learn and sit and talk, we used to sit and talk for hours about, you know, life, horses, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and just, you know, so many different things. So it was just more than just him teaching me, you know, some of the things that you need to know about racing. But even in racing, I mean, he he just, you know, really taught me how, you know, to be patient, you know, to give a horse a chance, you know, about switching leads, about doing this. So, I mean, just, man, I couldn't figure you need another 2 or 3 hours, maybe 2 or 3 days to tell you everything you ever taught me. I mean, it's just, like I said, it was more than just riding.
Mm-hmm. You pray after every race, is that right?
I pray constantly. There's not a time that something's not going through my head, to be honest with you.
What is the best advice Pat Day gave you?
You know, it wasn't just one piece of advice. You know, it was just, I don't know if you've ever, you know, I wish people could get, you know, the opportunity to come up under somebody like him. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being. Just how to treat people, how he was, how he conducted himself. I mean, he had his trials and tribulations of the early years and how he fought through it and overcame it and, you know, became just who he is and such a great, great man. It's just not one thing. It's life in general that I learned a lot from him.
Will you still talk to him quite a bit, Mike?
Oh, when I get a chance, yeah. We don't get a chance to talk on the phone, you know, as much as I'd like to, but when I get a chance to see him, and every now and then we'll reach out to each other.
You mentioned so many other big names in this sport and legendary names, really. What do you remember about that first time you walked into a jock's room and there was, you know, Jerry Bailey and Angel Cordero and those types of individuals in that jock's room with you?
Oh, it was just incredible. I mean, they're your idols. I mean, getting the opportunity to ride a race with Angel Cordero is just something that you don't get no better than that. Or Shoemaker, you know, or any of the greats like that. Lafitte, I remember, you know, meeting Lafitte for the first time. I was literally shaking, you know. And now these guys are my friends. I have dinner with them every night, you know. It's crazy.
I heard
but,
you were...
you know, just getting the opportunity to ride with those guys. Man, when people tell you there's so many different ways, you know, to win a race or to get things done, you watch so many different styles and how they all work. Mm-hmm. And how to use all of them, you know, with what you do naturally is, like I said, very, very blessed to have come up around all these guys and have learned so much from all of them. I still talk to Angel to this day. He still coaches me. You know, he'll call me up when I ride a great one. He'll call me up when he thinks I rode a bad one. You know, so, yeah, keep in touch with a lot of the guys, you know.
Mm-hmm. I saw
Gary's still riding. It's great to have Gary here, you know, riding with him. And, of course, me and Jerry Bailey are still very, very close friends. And although we don't get a chance to talk a lot, but we reach out to each other once every 2 or 3 months, you know, and get a chance to chat. And I get to see him whenever he's, you know, commentating one of the big races and stuff like that. But like I said, you know, getting a chance to be around all these great, great guys and still getting a chance to be around them. I mean, McCarron still stops in here and there, and I run into him in Kentucky. I just fought Eddie Delahousie. I was at Delta Downs the other day. He flew in there, and he showed up and got a chance to visit with him. And you know, like I said, still learning and learning from all the young talent that we have nowadays. I mean, it's one great thing about this sport is you never stop learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just never really do. I mean, I'm learning from so many young. We got so many talented young riders too right now. That's incredible.
Yeah, I've heard that you've taken Drayden Van Dyke under your wing, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, kind of. You know, he's living with me right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of just trying to show him what I was blessed to learn. You know, from some very talented riders and. You know, when you got people around you and you surround yourself around people that have been there, you know, that have had the experience, you learn quicker and you learn the right way and you learn what to do and what not to do. Trying to show him all the right things, I'm sure he'll learn things not to do that I do as well. So, you know, it's pretty neat to get the opportunity to have, you know, somebody like him. It's very rewarding, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you know, a lot of people, when you ask them who the greatest jockey is of all time, there's people that are going to say Mike Smith. And I'm just curious as to who Mike Smith might say is the greatest jockey of all time.
You know, there isn't. They're all so good. Like I said, so many different ways to win a race. And each and every one of those guys, I mean, I mentioned, you know, all those great riders. I mean, they're all great. At one not even at one time. We all have our times where they're probably riding better than anybody. And then this guy, all of a sudden, he'll be riding better than anybody. And this guy, I mean, they just kept switching back and forth between all of them. And just to watch it was amazing. It was whoever was, you know, blessed enough to be riding the right kind of horses and had that confidence level going. And you know, there's so many great quarterbacks. You know, how many great quarterbacks have you seen in the NFL? I mean, at one time, they were probably the greatest. And that's just the way it is with any sport, I believe.
Do you almost feel like you have an obligation to some of the younger guys now, Mike? Like Christina mentioned Drayden Van Dyke. Is that, you know, kind of your mindset now where you have that obligation to give back considering you receive so much coming up?
Well, you know, I've always kind of been that way. You know, like I said, I was blessed to have those guys who wanted to teach me. You know, when you're riding at that level, you know, you want these young riders to learn. It makes my job easier the better they are. Mm-hmm. You know, that way they're not making mistakes around you or in front of you or behind you. I mean, it's a dangerous sport as well. So you want all of us to be on the same page and to be riding well. And it makes the game a lot easier and a lot safer and a lot better for everything, really, for the horse, for the gambler, for whoever it may be. You want to, you know, you want people to learn and to learn right.
Definitely. I get it. I heard you were given Lafitte Pink Eye's saddle. Is that true?
Well, I basically took it from him. I don't know if he wanted to give it to me or not, but he had no choice. I got one, and Alex Solis got one. Great to have Alex. There's another unbelievable rider. I mean, so, like I said, I'm still blessed. We're still around. There's a few of us still around. And then you know, getting the chance to ride with these young, talented guys is still a lot of fun. But I still have Lafitte's saddle. I have it. I'm not going to tell you where it's at. Alex tried to steal it every time he finds out where it's at. He thought he was going to get that one. That Lafitte had a saddle that he has a tattoo on his arm, and it was like a skull with the crossbones, and he used to put that on his saddles. And of course, everyone wanted that saddle. So when Alex asked him for his, you know, his saddle, Lafitte thought that Alex was asking for his, like, old saddle, one that he started out with. So he gave Alex his old saddle, right? And I sold the one with the crossbones on it. So I got the one that Alex wanted. I won't give it up. I actually rode with it for a while, but then I was scared I was going to mess it up and I stopped riding with it.
Did you ever win a big race with that saddle?
Oh, yeah. Very big races with it.
Somebody told me that Kentucky Derby victory was with Lafitte's saddle. Is that right?
You know, I think it was, to be honest with you. That was a few years ago. I can't remember if I used that one or another one that I have. I got them all in a trunk somewhere, and they have on the back of them what big races I won on them. I'll have to go through there and look to see if it was that one. I know I was using that saddle at the time. Mm-hmm.
Visiting with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Mike, when you left New Mexico, where did you end up before you went to New York? Was there a stop in between?
Yeah, you know, I started with quarter horses, and then I took a little time off. I still was an apprentice, you know, and I hadn't, had to get into, you know, the thoroughbreds. I took a little time, and I went into Louisiana for a bit. Just to learn, I went down there with another apprentice. His name was Martinez, O.A. Martinez. And we went down there actually with J.J. Pletcher, which is Todd Pletcher's father. And then O.A. worked for J.J., and I'd help around as long. And I also worked for a man named Mr. Jones that was there for a while. And just to sit on the rail, gallop for a while, and sit on the rail and learn how to ride thoroughbreds. At the time, man, the great Larry Schneider was riding there, John Lively, man, David Whited. I mean, there were great, great riders that were riding there. So, you know, I got a chance to learn and watch them, and then went back into New Mexico for a few months and started doing really well on thoroughbred. And then the next thing you know, I wind up in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And that's where I really got started, you know, really got going. Had an agent named Paul Young, you know, from back there. We also had John Lively So to get a chance to learn from him as well was incredible. You know, I mean, it was, like I said, man, I've been very blessed. I've never felt like I've had to struggle, even though I wasn't doing good. It wasn't a struggle for me. I was just so happy to be where I was at, wherever that was. I mean, that could be in the winter at Hawthorne in Chicago, or it didn't matter. I was having a whole lot of fun.
How did you get to New York?
you know, just riding those Midwestern circuits and riding in Kentucky, you know, I went into King in the course and was doing real well at Churchill in the 80s, you know, the towards the late 80s. And wind up going into New York with Phil Hallswall and Billy Mott. You know, I'd ridden horses for Billy Mott and Shug McGahee before they had all gone into New York. So I had some good people that were going to at least give me an opportunity to ride some horses when I got there. So that's why I went. And, you know, little by little, it just started really taking off. After the first winter of New York, I just never really looked back, to be honest with you.
How did you like the
again,
cold?
You know, getting the opportunity to ride for those kind of people is what it's all about. You know, you got to get the chance, and then when you do get the opportunity, you got to make the most of it. We've been very blessed.
How did you like the cold weather? How was that to get used to from New Mexico to New York?
You know, it didn't matter. I was so happy to be riding and, of course, doing well at the time. I mean, I didn't care how cold it was. I was just having fun doing what I was doing. And now if I was to go back and ride it, I mean, I might be a little more on the spoiled side, especially after riding in California for 12 or 13 years. You know, you get a little bit spoiled out here. The weather's just always incredible. Even when it's cold or rainy, it's still beautiful out here. So I can honestly say that I probably wouldn't want to do that right now, but it sure didn't bother me then.
Well, and you're in a great position now, Mike. With everything you've accomplished, you're able to kind of pick your spots a little bit and to really focus on riding the upper echelon type horses in the sport, and that's a great position to be in.
It certainly is, and again, having a great agent working for me, and Brad Pegram, you know, who really gets it, you know, and understands where I'm at in my career and what we want and how to utilize the time that I have left to our best advantage, and he's really done a great job of picking and choosing and you know, which is hard to do at times because, you know, you can't be telling, you know, people no too many times because then they, you know, get offended and they won't ride you, period. So, you know, he's done a great job of really going after the right kind of horses and making the initiative and going after them. And, of course, if you're doing well, it's a whole lot easier to get them, you know. But so I got to give a lot of credit to him.
Hall of Famer Mike Smith here on our inaugural Jock Talk show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're going to get to a quick commercial break. Mike, when we come back, we'll take a look at some of your most memorable moments. There have been plenty, and a half hour won't do it justice, but we'll cover that next in the second half of the show. This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay with us.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic! It's a race for the ages!
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Toneland!
Wise Dan gets his head in front! The first $1 million race in Keeneland history!
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion, Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Apfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is David Cohen.
This is Gary Siaka.
This is David Jacobson.
This is Gary Gallo.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Zenyatta has a lot of ground to make up. Zenyatta, if she wins this, she'll be a super horse. She's starting to pick them off, though. Zenyatta going to hook to the outside. Meanwhile, it's Colonel John Summerbird in the red cap. And Zenyatta's come to the outside. Zenyatta coming flying on the grandstand side. Gio Conti on the inside. Summerbird is right there. This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance, one we'll never forget. Looked impossible, but it is Zenyatta, still unbeaten under Mike Smith. Gio Conti second, Summerbird, and then Richards Kidd. What a dramatic performance, one of the most sensational ever. Zenyatta wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
The brilliant Zenyatta and her Breeders' Cup Classic score under Hall of Famer Mike Smith. It is one of so many memorable moments in the career of the Hall of Famer. And you've just heard some of the background about Mike and how Mike got started in the sport, some of the people that helped him along the way. We're going to spend the second half of Jock Talk focusing on some of his biggest wins and really looking forward to this second half of the show. Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, back with you on this inaugural Jock Talk show. We're going to bring it to you each and every Tuesday night, 6 to 7 Eastern. And yes, you can listen to us exclusively on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net and available via podcast on our website and on iTunes. So you can also go back and listen to these Jock Talk shows at your leisure. Well, Mike, I mentioned the name Zenyatta, and we will definitely spend a little time talking about Zenyatta in the second half of the program. But I want to kind of take it from where you left off in the first half of the show and talking about being in New York and how blessed you were and how things were going so well. You come to the Breeders' Cup in 1992 and Lure bursts onto the scene. You win the Breeders' Cup mile. It's your first of 21 Breeders' Cup victories. Could you ever imagine?
No, I couldn't, but I know after I won that first one with Lure that I wanted to win a whole lot more of them. That was a feeling that I never had gotten before. It was incredible, you know, to win a Breeders' Cup that early on in my age and getting the opportunity to ride a great horse like Lure was just, I still get goosebumps every time I think about it.
How'd you pick up the mount on Lure?
Let's see, how did I get on Lure? Because Jerry broke his maiden. He actually said, I think he set a track record first time out going like 5/5/8 of a mile or 5.5 furlongs, I believe. And then I got on Lure because he ran in the wintertime in New York for some race at some point. I believe it's what it was. And Jerry was in Florida. It was like on a Saturday. It must have been a big day in Florida that day, and he couldn't come down. And I was fortunate enough to win on him. He won very impressively. Then he ran him back there in the Gotham, I think it was, and I won that as well. He dead heated with a horse called Devil Is Due. He was actually jumped a big shadow there about the 16th pole, and the horse got by him, and he came back and wind up dead heating with him. And then that's how I wind up on Lure, and I just kept him through his whole career. We didn't lose very often, so. No reason to make a change, you know.
Yeah, that win in the Gotham might be one of my favorite rides of yours. But is it also true that the horse you dead heated with, you rode that horse as well?
Yeah, that was. Well, you're good. That was a while back. Yeah, that was Devil Is Due. Was a great horse. Yeah. I mean, he was a really good. We went on to win some great. I went some great races, you know, for Alan Jerkins with him. I mean, he was a lot of fun to ride. Beautiful black horse. He was all black, and he was so pretty.
Well, Mike, the following year was also pretty special for you because now you're really rolling. You get going in 1992 with Lure. You come back the next year in 93. You win with Lure again in the Breeders' Cup Mile. But that 1993, that was a really special year. You set the record for stakes wins with 62, and you also win the Preakness Stakes with Prairie Bayou. What a magical year. Look back on that year for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, that was really the first, what you call a big-time breakout year for me. I mean, I won so many stakes that year. I think we won, 20 grade ones, I think, or something that year. And, was riding, Prairie Bayou, who was just a great horse in his own right. I think he ran, something like 14 times. It was never worse than second, until he got hurt in the Belmont. He was an incredible horse. He was first or second every time he ever ran. He was just an amazing horse. And people don't really hear much about him, but he was just about as good as most of them, to be honest with you. He was really that talented. And had a big year with breaking the stake record that year and, winning a second, Breeders' Cup race with Lure again, in California, breaking from way on the outside to actually dominate the race. He won pretty handy that day. I never even passed him with a stick at all, just a hand ride the whole race. And, phenomenal year, and followed up the next year with even a better year, which was hard to believe. Things were really rolling and going extremely well all the way up until, 1998, which also started out probably was going to be my best year of all, to be honest with you, until that day at Saratoga when I broke my back and I went over the inside hedge there at Saratoga and wound up breaking my back in two places. And that's when things kind of came unwound a little bit. Tried to come back way too soon, way sooner than I should have. Was, riding in a lot of pain and all of a sudden things became difficult. It wasn't as easy as it was in the past. And that was probably the first really big and probably the only really big struggle I've ever really, really had. It took a while to get over it and to get through it and to get back on track. And I remember I just started doing good again, and I didn't want to leave New York until I was doing well. And I was having dinner with Shug one night, Shug McGahey, and I remember him telling me, I told him what he thought about if I was thinking about moving my tack to California. He said, I think it'd be a good idea. He told me, I think you should do that. It'd be nice to just get a fresh start somewhere else, and you've kind of gotten yourself going a bit again, and all you need is one good horse out there. Just get on one good horse out there, and you'll be rolling again. I mean, because you're riding right now as good as you ever were. So just trust in that and believe in that and go out there and do what you did here in the beginning. So I did. Lo and behold, I run into a filly. Her name was Azari. And, man, that was the thing that got me going in California. I mean, geez, she went, 14 or 15 in a row before she got beat herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've done pretty well with those fillies, my friend. The four-legged ones.
Yeah, we've done really, really well with both, but I have been very blessed. At least five, just maybe even seven of the greatest fillies of all time, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm always fascinated, just going back to that day in 1998 that you referenced where things really got tough after that spill at Saratoga, and it was absolutely horrific to watch. But at any point, Mike, during your recovery from that, did you ever consider just hanging it up?
Not during the recovery. It was once I started back and I started struggling. I never struggled. Well, at least I never thought I'd struggle before, because even when I wasn't doing well before, I was still at a place that I had never reached that kind of fame now you're talking about going from the top now all of a sudden back down and now you know what it tastes like up there. Before, I'd never known what it was like up there. So therefore, it's never really necessarily a bad thing. You just keep working it until you just keep doing better, and life just keeps taking you higher and higher and higher. And then once you've been up there, now all of a sudden, you're not riding those kind of horses anymore. And of course, as we all know, once in any sport or any athlete, once they get hurt and try to make a comeback, if things ain't going well or very well, well, all of a sudden they're not the same no more. And, you know, I never felt that I wasn't the same no more. That what wasn't the same was my confidence level. Mm-hmm. And that's what disappeared on me, is now I started to believe it. Mm-hmm. And then once you start believing it, well, then you start doubting yourself. And then once you start doubting yourself, then everything goes wrong. It doesn't matter what you do. It just doesn't go right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just about putting yourself in the right place, right frame of mind, and just really believing in yourself. And, again, surrounding yourself around the right people so that you get opportunities, you know, to make the most. And then you got to make the most of them. And it took a while to finally get there again. But little by little, like I said, I started getting there again. And by the time I headed to California, well, I was back on track and was ready somewhere new, get the opportunity to ride with all the great riders in California, and they were all still riding at the time, all of them, you know, other than Shu had retired. But I'd gotten to ride with him a bit before I'd gone to California, but all the other guys were all still riding. I mean, you know, Lafitte was still riding, Eddie was still riding, Chris, you know, of course, Gary's still riding here, Alex. They're both still riding, but I mean, so now I get a chance to ride with these guys. And the young talented riders that were here as well, and DeSormo, and, you know, Nakatani. There were so many Nakatani. Man, I just learned it all over again. It was like, wow, a new fresh start, getting to ride with these other great riders on the other side of the coast, you know. And it was amazing. You know, getting a chance to ride good horses again, as you well know, you get a chance to ride a good horse, and you get one that, you know, that just drags you across the wire first, and all of a sudden you think you're greatest rider that ever rode again. You know, mm-hmm. even though you didn't do any of the running, it just makes you feel that way. And before you know it, well, got myself back in the right place that I needed to be, and mm-hmm. you know, been blessed ever since. And then little by little, working my way into John Sheriff's barn, and next thing you know, we got a horse like Giacomo that comes up, and we win the Kentucky Derby, and well, another one comes after that, and then and here comes this, the monster of all times, Zenyatta, pops up. And again, that's a whole other story in itself. I think that'd be another thing we'd have to take a few days to talk about. And she was just, she was incredible. She was something you just really had to experience. We could sit here and talk about her for hours, and I don't think anybody would ever get it unless you got that chance to really see her one time. And in seeing her one time, it described everything that everyone's ever said about her, you know. She was that good.
Well, I found it interesting that you weren't, and people may not remember this, Mike, you weren't the regular rider on Zenyatta starting out. That was David Flores. You didn't ride her until her fourth start in the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn.
Yeah, but I was supposed to be. He had never even been on her, to be honest with you. I didn't get on her before she ever ran. I had to go out of town as the reason he rode her. I was out of town the first few times that she ran, so I couldn't ride her. I was obligated to ride, and there were very big races at the time. I think she was going to run a maiden race, and I was going to ride a favorite in a grade one in Kentucky. So, you know, we didn't know she was Zenyatta at that point. You got to go ride the favorite in the grade one and the second time as well, and then I finally got her back, you know.
So what's that situation like among jockeys? Is it a little awkward when you go back into the jocks room and, you know, having taken that, well, not taken that mount, but it was your mount to begin with. But what's that situation like when you go back into the jocks room?
No, I mean, he knew all along. You know, David did. He was just blessed. He got to ride her three times. But he knew. I was riding everything for John at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was very blessed to get the chance to ride her three times and did a tremendous job. I mean, he rode her as well as I did, to be honest with you. He rode her great. But I was lucky enough that you know, like I said, I was riding everything with John, and we were still doing really well, and we were taking a horse called Tiago, who I won the Santa Anita Derby on for John that year, to Oaklawn to run in the following year, to run in the Oaklawn Handicap. And then that was going to be her first real big race that she was going to run in. I think they had, I forget who was in there. I know Bobby Frankel's really good mare was in the race, and Jerry Hollendorfer's really good mare was in the race. I mean, it was a tough, tough race for me to be riding her in her first time. And she literally toyed with the field that day. I mean, she won so easy. Probably her largest margin of victory that she ever won by, because she never really cared to really open up on the field. She just liked to just get by him. And then that was always kind of enough for her, you know, but she actually drew away that day and won by about 5 or 6 lengths, I believe, something like that. She just couldn't help it. She was just galloping through the lane and just kept opening on up, which was incredible. But then, of course, that's when I rode her and was, you know, and gotten her back. We wound up winning the handicap and the Apple Blossom both. So it was a great flight home.
Definitely. Mike, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. You talked about the high highs and the low lows of being a jockey in this sport and how tough it is mentally, not only physically, to do this. And so I want to ask you, when you're going to ride a horse like Zenyatta with all that pressure that's on you and how you have to have that confidence, how do you prep before a race?
Well, you know, I work out a lot. And especially once you're getting on a horse of that caliber, you kind of know where they're going and what the game plan is as far as down the road. I mean, it's probably, you know where the next big race is that she's going to run in. You know what the next one is after that. And I would literally train for it. I mean, I'd eat right, no alcohol, work out. I mean, I would do just to be the absolutely best I could be, because as every race that she won, it was just more and more and more, course, pressure. You know, I mean, everyone, you know, wants it to continue, and you certainly don't want to get beat,
right?
And it becomes harder, and I just felt that I had to be at my best at all times as well. Although most of the time when she won, you probably didn't even need to open my eyes, to be honest with you. She was that good. But you know, I try to keep myself in that kind of shape as well, and I still do, and I do that for all big races. But I really work hard to get myself in the best shape that I possibly can, physically and mentally, and you know, I just believe in the horse. I believe in who I'm riding. I don't know. They just know I believe in them. I try not to ever panic. I try to really, really focus, slow things down, do the right thing by them, and give them every opportunity to do what they do best, whatever that is that they do that makes them better than the others. I try to do and try to keep it as simple as possible most of the time.
Mike,
you know, Claiborne Farms has a saying that they said that Mr. Hancock used to say when they were young, you do the usual unusually well. and that's just what I try to do.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned the pressure that went along with riding Zenyatta. Is that streak and the winning streak continued to build and her legend continued to grow? Could you actually sense that pressure during her races as you were riding her, or once you're out there, is it just business as usual?
It was always leading up to it that was the hardest for me. It was the pressure leading up to it. I just needed to get on. Once you leg me up, then it's me and her. Then I have some sort of control as well as her, you know. And so once I was on, it was just about doing the right thing, you know. It was just about doing the right thing, following the flow, not doing nothing out of the ordinary, just keeping it as simple as possible. And it's amazing how if you do things like that, but the outcome is, you know, it's when you try to make everything so difficult and try and do this and that, that's when things don't seem to go at least well for me anyway. You know, just when I just focus and really just concentrate on the horse and the race and what makes them the best that they are, what's gotten them there, and just keep it simple and keep it real, you know. And that's what I would do with her. So once I got on, I had a blast. Man, it was just fun. She would put a show on. She would dance. I mean, she'd stand up and tower over all the other horses as to say that I'm not even paying attention to you. You know, she intimidated them. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. She'd intimidate the boys. I mean, because she literally towered over them. It was nothing for her to stand up and just be a whole neck above them. I mean, it was like a dinosaur almost. So it was pretty cool. The whole thing, you know, leading up to the race was just as special almost as winning it, to be honest with you. And after, things that she would do after the race, she'd come back still dancing, and we got to parading her all the way down to the other end and all the way back, and the crowd was just so crazy for her, man. It was just amazing. I've never experienced something like that. I've gotten close, you know, with a horse like Holy Bull, who had a big fan following, but I don't think any horse that I've been around anyway has had the biggest fan following as she has. To this day, I mean, I still get stuff in the mail all the time, the sign and
really?
Back and this and for that. Pretty special.
Do you think that she enjoyed that attention?
She sure acted like she did. Oh, she knew it too. She knew when the cameras were there, man. I mean, as soon as she started hearing that, she'd see you pick one up. Oh, she'd stand up and pose, and her whole demeanor would change once she got around it. All the people in the cameras. I mean, she loved it.
Visiting with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, we're with you every single Tuesday night with this program, 6 to 7 Eastern Time. Mike, I want to go back to something you said earlier when you were talking about coming back from your injury, and you talked about how you had a taste of competing at the highest level, and that's what you really wanted to do again, and that's what made it so difficult to get back. I guess it's kind of the same with the Kentucky Derby. You win your first and now only Derby with 50-1 shot Giacomo, finally break through that day. Now, does it make you want to get back to that Derby's winner circle even more now that you have that taste?
Oh, without a doubt. I want to win the Triple Crown as bad as I ever did. I mean, I used to dream that I used to dream I was going three of them. To be honest with you, I'm still hunting for that first one, man. I can't wait. You know, I'm riding a couple of really nice 2-year-olds that you know have that kind of ability. You know, that's so it's exciting. I hope that they continue on. You know, as you well know, it's a long way to the Derby. A hell of a week is a long way to the Derby. To be honest with you, so many things can happen, but. But right now we're riding some talented horses that have that kind of ability. So you never know. You just never know.
I feel like we're just scratching the surface on some of your big horses. We could spend another hour talking about those horses and probably still never cover it, Mike, with all the champions that you've been aboard. But in 2003, you're inducted into racing's Hall of Fame. And I can only imagine what that afternoon must have been like for you. Look back on that day for a minute.
Oh, geez, man. It was incredible. Yes, I mean, I didn't feel worthy, to be honest with you, when I found out I was getting into the Hall of Fame. You know, although you don't have to win the Derby to be in the Hall of Fame, I had been given so many good opportunities to win it and hadn't done it yet. I think I'd been second like 3 or 4 times, 5 times or something like that. Still hadn't won. And to me, there were some riders that hadn't got in yet that I thought were well more worthy than I was. Still, I was, of course, still the greatest thing ever, and was still so excited about it. But just felt that I really needed to win that Derby to make myself, just for myself, to feel that I was finally there and that I did belong. Because, like I said, given the opportunity that I had been given and didn't get it done, I needed to get that done. And again, was just blessed to be on Giacomo that day and. I think that day as well was Mr. Moss's birthday. I think it was either the day before, the day after. I want to say it was even on that day that it was his birthday. And we talk about a birthday present for him and something that just basically just capped off my career and made me feel like I actually finally belong in the Hall of Fame. Was getting the opportunity to ride him and to win on him on that day was incredible. You know, since then we've been second again a few times, so I need to get back on that winning mark. I've always thought that there's a Triple Crown there for me. I know there is. I just always had that feeling, and so a couple of years ago I ran second in all three. I thought to myself, well, I hope that one is. I was feeling. I'm at first 3 times, not second in all three.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
In the same year, I think I'm the only rider that's ever done that.
That's hard to do. You're Alidar.
Yeah, I was Alidar, yeah. So I was telling myself, man, I hope that's not what I was dreaming about.
Mike, in addition to the Hall of Fame, you've had so many other honors bestowed upon you, and I think rightfully so, over your career. You've been the recipient of 2 Eclipse Awards in 1993 and 94. You've even won an ESPY Award. And then in 1994, you were honored with the Mike Venezia Memorial Award. And in 2000, you received the George Wolfe Memorial Award. And I know when you get those kind of honors, especially something like the George Wolfe that is voted on by your peers, it has to mean an awful lot to you.
Well, they certainly do. Again, I think they mean more to me now than they actually did at the time that I won them, just because I'm older now, and a lot of those things I was so blessed to want them at such a young age. And all that was on my mind was what about tomorrow? What can I win tomorrow? And I want to win tomorrow, and I want to win, you know, the next race. And as you get older, you learn to kind of sit back and appreciate all of it all over again, even more so, which is great. I even appreciate a horse more now, I think, than ever, to be honest with you. You know, just so blessed. I'm sitting in the house right now with a fireplace going, watching a great movie, talking to you guys on the phone, and that's all because of a horse. Pretty incredible.
It is truly incredible. I think Christine is going to be mad if I don't ask you this next question, but tell me about appearing in ESPN the magazine body issue.
That was embarrassing. You know, the honor is somewhat because, you know, they take, you know, these great athletes, they showcase their bodies and, you know, put them in a respectable magazine. It's supposed to be a really good thing. But when they said they wanted me in it, and I agreed to it, I didn't understand what they meant by the body issue. You know, I thought, well, they want to see your body. Well, maybe you got to take your shirt off or something, you know, or something. I didn't realize you had to be completely naked. I didn't know that until I walked on the photo shoot.
You're kidding.
I swear to you.
So how'd that go?
I had a robe on, and I walked out with, like, jock pants and boots. They said, no, you don't understand. It's the body, you have to take care of it. I said, well, you got to be kidding me. I mean, there's girls around, and there's, you have a coupon. It's just us. But by the end of the photo shoot, you won't even care that they're around. I was like, yeah, my butt, I won't. They say, we'll cover you up in certain places that they won't even see you. You'll have a helmet here, a hand here. Oh, it was extremely embarrassing for the first hour, I would say. And you know, they were right. By the end of the photo shoot, I'm walking around, hey, like I was in the Josh room, you know. I hope my mom didn't hear that.
Okay, Mike, I'm going to give you a chance to brag a little bit. What victory do you consider to be your best ride, if you can pick out one?
My best ride? Well, I got three that I think I did a good job on. You know, the first one being, I won the Travers years ago on a horse called Coronado's Quest. Mm. And I thought to win that race, and going in, I remember having dinner with Shug a couple nights before, and going over the race over dinner that, you know, we truly believed we could win it, but we had to really do things right. We weren't sure we could get a mile and a quarter at the time, and, you know, the circumstances were going to be up against us a bit, but if we could do this way and just right, I think we can pull this off. And I won in a triple dead heat. I won by a half a nose. And I'm telling you, that was one of those races where just every step was just perfect. From the first step out of the gate to the last step at the wire was just right. It was one of those races where you thought, oh my God, that couldn't have gone any smoother. And then for it to happen in the Travers was incredible. The second being the Kentucky Derby, I felt the same way. I truly felt I could win. I thought circumstances were going to help me in this situation. But in doing so, I was going to have to do this and cut this corner and do that and do this. And man, I mean, what a race. I think it was voted one of the top 10 best Kentucky Derby rides of all time, I believe it was. Number one being Shoemaker on Ferdinand. So it was in the top 10 anyway. And then when I rode Zenyatta in the Classic, I'm not sure if it was my best ride or if it was my best job of hanging on and just letting her take me everywhere she wanted to go. But I just never got in her way. And I mean, she even did some running back moves down the lane. She literally stepped sideways like two steps to get out of a situation and then straight forward again, and which is just incredible. So those three races were probably, I would say, were my best three rides ever of all time. And then I can tell you almost every time I rode Holy Bull, it was that way.
Well, Mikey, I wish we had more time to... Yeah, I wish we had more time to get into Holy Bull. Unfortunately, this hour is up, believe it or not. It has flown by. I've had so much fun. Christina's had a blast. talking with you, hearing your story. And Kane, thank you enough for helping us get Jock Talk off the ground here on HRN.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. You know, I was telling you earlier, it's like trying to get a kid to take a bath. If they don't ever want to get in, then once they get in, they don't want to get out, and I don't want out now. Now I got to call somebody to come.
Mikey, we appreciate it, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy yourself. Thank you.
Thanks, Hall of Famer Mike holidays. Smith. Yeah, you too. Kicking things off for us on Jock Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can catch us every Tuesday right here, 6 to 7 Eastern, streaming at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget to listen to the podcast. It's available on our website and on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Christina McManigal, I am Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on Jock Talk on HRRN.